Barmore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Sunday, the 28th of February, the last Sunday of February. 1st of March will be tomorrow. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Well, we've got a couple of guests lined up today. I hope that they show up as promised. This first half hour, we're going to have Mr. John DiNardo. John should be calling in here shortly, but since my engineer hasn't cleared my board off, I don't have a clue if anybody's calling or not. But that will be the first half hour, and then the second half hour, the first half hour, the second hour, I should say, I'm supposed to have James McCanny. So that will be interesting to interview these two men. And looks like we have Mr. DiNardo on hold here, and we'll get to John here in just a moment. A lot going on. The reason I got these two guests today is these recent earthquakes, the one in Haiti right at a month ago, and of course a couple of days ago the one in Chile. Now, it's not really clear to me the magnitude of this. I was talking to John about this earlier, and we'll talk about this some more here in a moment, but apparently this 8.8, if they're using the Richter scale, it's been changed. John and I are going to talk about that. And in fact, let's just go ahead and bring John up. John, are you there, sir? Thank you, sir. Let's do a little bit of bio here. I know that you've got a bachelor's degree in something. What's your
bachelor's degree in science education. Okay. I taught high school physics and was also an electrical engineer with Bell Laboratories and numerous other electronics companies as a circuit designer.
Oh, okay. Well, that I didn't know that part of your bio before, but it makes some of the pieces fall into place. So,
yeah.
This is our first break, John. Hold on, everybody. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 28th of February, 2010. John, are you still there, sir?
Yes, I am, John.
Let's get your details. I've had some inquiries about your radio show. Let's tell people how we can get to your radio show before we move on to the topic at hand.
Okay, it's called Planet X in Bible Prophecy. It's on every Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on shortwave 3185. That's WWRB. You can hear it on WWRB.org on the internet also, as well as on 3185 shortwave.
All right.
10 o'clock, Sunday
right.
evenings, Eastern Time.
And it's got kind of a theatrical twist to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, that name, the call letters, yeah, sound like WWW.
No. I mean the show itself. It's not just a straightforward reporting, right?
What I do is I take clips to try to dramatize it because you know this is such a grave subject. It's so important that people understand the gravity of it, and pun intended, that I've decided to make it a drama and to take the testimony of numerous people, not just myself. You know, when one person does all the speaking week after week, that person's credibility becomes limited to that person alone.
Right.
Whereas if
right.
you take the testimony of numerous people, then the credibility becomes greatly expanded. So what I do is have musical background with testimony regarding validity of Planet X in various different fields from the viewpoint of various different fields of study and dramatize it with music. And
all right.
It's very effective and inspiring to a lot of people.
Well, you and I have both been at this quite a while here, John, and trying to be the watchman on the wall, so to speak, about the 10th planet. And you and I have both been talking for a number of years about number. increasing number and severity of seismic events, and it's pretty much in our face now, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's pretty well understood by a lot of scientists. I think many scientists today are being forced to just be quiet about it because they're dependent upon funding from the government in order to make a living. So they have right. They have to toe the government line. And the government line is, well, it's really nothing. There's really no increase in the earthquake activity. And I heard somebody on Fox News yesterday during in the aftermath of that great earthquake, somebody from USGS commenting to the announcer on Fox News or CNN that, oh, this is just, it's just an anomaly. It's, you know, sometimes earthquake activity increases and sometimes it decreases, it ebbs and flows. So there's really no pattern of increasing earthquakes. Well, this is what they're told to say in order to allay fears of the public, to keep the public from going into a state of panic.
Well, and just before, you probably heard me talking about the Richter scale. Now, you and I know this, but and some of my regular listeners, because I do occasionally mention it, but Charles F. Richter developed the Richter scale, and shortly after his death in the 1984-1985 time frame, the Richter scale was reduced by one full number value. Because they knew 25 years ago what would be happening 25 years in the future, which of course is right now.
That's right. That's what I had figured also several years ago. And also James McCanney, I think, mentioned that. You know, yesterday, these announcers were finally giving us a little bit of a background. The CNN and Fox News announcers in the aftermath of the earthquake were telling us what the Richter scale meant. And I was surprised to hear them say that when you go from a 7.0 magnitude to an 8.0, it's an increase of 32 times the intensity. And I was surprised because it used to be on the Richter scale, as far as I know, each 1 point.
Doubles, right. So it'd be a 1,000% increase.
Yeah, right. Each one-tenth right. of a point doubles it, right? Or adds a factor
right.
of 10.
Right.
So
right.
when you go from point 1 to point 2 to point 3, it's 10 times 10 times 20 times 30, right. et cetera, until you right. get up to times, times 2 times 3 times 4, et cetera, until you get up to times 10. Going right. from a 7.0 to an 8.0, but now right. they're going from 7.8, and they're saying it's as much as a 32 times increase. Well, that'd
be 3,200%, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean that's like saying, okay, now we're keeping the numbers, making the numbers
I'm wondering, do they know what they're even talking about?
Well, they got this from NASA and the okay. people at the USGS. Actually, mm-hmm. That's what they are told to. Revealed to the public. So evidently what they've done is fudge these figures, because when you go from, instead of going from an increase of 10, a factor of 10 in intensity, when you go from a 7.0 to an 8.0, now they're going to a factor of 32 times greater intensity, going from a 7.0 to an 8.0. Well, and that makes the numbers seem a lot less damaging than they really are.
Well, they keep, like I said off the air an hour ago, John, they keep moving the goalposts. We've heard a number of times about the older earthquake in Chile that was a 9.3. Now, that was on the Richter scale, the original Richter scale, while Richter was still alive, correct?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, right, so they're saying, oh, that old earthquake was really, really bad. This new yeah. earthquake is not even as bad as that, when in fact, this new earthquake is worse than the old one. It's just that they moved the goalpost.
Considerably. We got a caller here. You mind taking a call, John?
Sure.
And this gentleman is from Arkansas. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Guy here. Hey, I know that you, from time to time, you bring up the subject of Planet X and all, and I find this a really fascinating subject historically and, prepared-wise. My question is that where are all these amateur astronomers at if this body is out there, you can put filters to blind out the glare of the sun and hopefully bring out enhance this planet coming in to some degree. And all we're getting is SOHO imagery and Echelon and all those other government sponsored telescopes out there. I'd like to know, where are the amateur astronomers at trying to find this thing and publish their pictures, what they see? Any word on that? And I'll take your comments off there.
That's a good question. Go ahead there, John.
There are a couple reasons. First of all, it's coming. Planet X is coming in from the south, below our circular table, so to speak. You know, visualize us, our solar system as a revolving circular table in a Chinese restaurant, and we are sort of like, our planet is like a walnut sitting on that table, revolving slowly with the sun, a big lamp at the center of that table. Well, this planet, according to Dr. Robert S. Harrington of the U.S. Naval Observatory, one of the greatest astronomers in the world before he died, he says, tells us that his calculations show that Planet X and, well, and we know that it's surrounding gravitationally gripped
debris field.
Mass gang of bodies is coming at us from the south, below that table. It's coming off at an angle away from the table, from the constellation. Well, he claimed at the time his calculation showed it was coming from Scorpius. I have to check, do some checking to see if it was from Orion or Scorpius, because I know the infrared astronomical satellite had stated back in results revealed in 1983 that it was coming from the direction of Orion. So I have to clarify that discrepancy there, whether it was Scorpius or Orion. Well, but the point is, you cannot see it from the northern hemisphere. You can only see it from the southern hemisphere, and only during the months of May and June. Complicating factor.
Go ahead, John.
And that is that it's surrounded by so much dust that it's not clearly observable with a regular telescope. You need X-ray telescopes. You need the infrared telescopes, which they have used. Now, recently, the Chandra, the United States NASA's Chandra X-ray observatory satellite sighted it. This was only within the last couple months, and this is a tremendous revelation. Now, they've sighted it, they've kept it basically quiet. What they have, they were not able to conceal it completely, so what they said was, we see a comet out there, we don't know what it is.
Right.
That's their way of basically keeping it hush-hush. But
that's a cover
story.
They
need an X-ray satellite, telescope, and that's what they've done. They've sighted it, and that's, I think, answers your question as to why amateurs cannot see it.
John, I haven't verified this, but I've been told that Google Earth has a space program that you can look out to space, and that when you look towards the constellation Orion, it's blacked out.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Like I said, I haven't independently verified that, but if it's true, it'd be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a major breakthrough in understanding this. What I'd like to do real quickly, I mean, I got a couple of fascinating things to read to you.
Please,
one of them is the 1984... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, I'm listening.
Oh, yeah. The 1984, September 10th, 1984, I'm holding a photocopy of this article from the one of the largest news magazines, one of the three largest news magazines in the world, U.S. News and World Report, September 10th, 1984. I photocopied this at my county library. Here's the article, Planet X, is it really out there? And it's a brief article, so I'll try to get through it quickly. Shrouded from the sun's light, mysteriously tugging at the orbits of Uranus and Neptune, is an unseen force that astronomers suspect may be Planet X, a 10th resident of the Earth's celestial neighborhood. They're saying it's a planet in our solar system. Last year, the infrared astronomical satellite, the IRAS, circling in a polar orbit 560 miles from the Earth, detected heat from an object about 50
million
miles away.
Hold on, John. Hold your spot. Hold your spot. We got a break. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be back after the break. Stay tuned.
An inside corner on the truth, thanks to John Moore and the Republic Broadcasting Network. To talk to John Moore live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 28th day of February, 2010. John, you still there, sir?
John.
Okay, please continue the U.S. News and World Report, correct?
Yes, U.S. News and World Report, September 10th, 1984, the article titled, Planet X, Is It Really Out There? And they say that this Planet X may be the 10th planet in our solar system. It says, quote, last year, the infrared astronomical satellite, IRAS, circling in a polar orbit 560 miles from the Earth, detected heat from an object of about 50 billion miles away that is now the subject of intense speculation. Quote, all I can say is that we don't know what it is yet, says Jerry Neugebauer, director of the Palomar Observatory for the California Institute of Technology. Scientists are hopeful that the one-way journeys of the Pioneer 10 and 11 space probes may help to locate this nameless body. And incidentally, since this article was written, Pioneer 10 and 11 space probes indeed detected this unseen but gravitationally felt massive body when they were sent out into distant, into the far reaches of the solar system. The gravitational pull on these two space probes, one of them actually, they were sent out in different directions, I believe, proved that there was indeed a gravitational pull just where they had, in an area that they had calculated. So they felt it, still couldn't see it, but they certainly did feel it. Continuing with the article, some astronomers say the heat-emitting object, this Planet X, is an unseen collapsed star or possibly a brown dwarf. And I think most people today would believe that it is a brown dwarf. That is a protostar that never got hot enough to become a star. However, a growing number of astronomers insist that the object is a dark, gaseous mass that is slowly evolving into a planet. But today, again, the brown dwarf theory seems to hold more credibility.
Right.
Continuing on, for decades, astronomers have noted that the orbits of two huge distant planets, Neptune and Uranus, deviate slightly from what they should be according to the laws of physics. Gravitational pull from Planet X would explain that deviation. Moreover, says Neugebauer, quote, if we can show that our own solar system is still creating planets, we'll know that it's happening around other stars too. Okay, so there's your evidence right there that this is not a fictitious name that a bunch of overly imaginative science fiction writers came up with. No, the name Planet X was adopted by the entire scientific community, as I have indicated or proven here in this New York Times article. I've got a New York Times Sunday, January 30th, 1983, where they say that in 1846, the name was dubbed, this unseen gravitationally felt body was dubbed Planet X by the world's astronomical community, and people have been searching for it, for a feather in their caps, this is my own words here, ever since 1781, believe it or not, 1781, when the first perturbations, gravitational perturbations, were detected by the astronomers of the world. So this is a real name. It's a bona fide name of a planet, Planet X.
Right.
Now, here's another thing. This is a very important key factor to put together all this information. It comes by cyclically because it is a comet. It's on a cometary orbit, even though it's a huge, believed to be a huge brown dwarf star, a protostar. It's on a cometary orbit, meaning its orbit is sort of shaped like a bicycle chain. Consider a bicycle chain. The path, its path travels around the front sprocket wheel of the bike, and that would be the sun. And then the chain continues on, or encircles the rear sprocket wheel of the bicycle, and that would be analogous to the distant sun in our solar system. And all astronomers will tell you that most solar systems have twin suns, have two suns. They're called binary solar systems.
Right.
Three out of four solar systems are binary. So now we have two sprocket wheels of the bicycle, our sun and this distant sun, which is estimated to be about 50 billion miles away. So because it's on a cometary orbit, it goes back and forth, like sort of like a baseball would be thrown back and forth by two pitchers warming up in a bullpen. And now, because it's on a cyclical back and forth cometary orbit, we can look back into ancient history and find out when it made previous incursions into our solar system. And
absolutely,
we find out that history tells us that the Earth was devastated around 1450 or 1500, we'll say 1500 BC, during the time of the Israelites' exodus from Egypt, as described in the Bible, in the book of Exodus. If you go back another 35, that was 3,500 years ago, 1500 right. BC. Go back another 3,500 years, and you find that the flood of Noah's day occurred also. And there is a Bible scholar who is aged and who's been doing nothing but eating, sleeping, and drinking the Bible for the past 53 years. His name is Harold Camping. He's on radio stations all around the world. And he and a team of scholars have long ago determined solely from the Bible, solely from information in the Bible, that the flood of Noah's day was around 5,000 B.C. So now we've got time index marks, very important key indexes, time chronological indexes.
Well, John, I should mention.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I won't mention anything until the break's over, but everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Russia with love, I fly to you.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 28th of February, 2010. John, are you still there, sir? Hello, John.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay,
hello.
Good. Let's go back to where we left off before the break.
Yeah, okay, so now we have time indices. We have the 1500 BC, which is approximately 3,500 years past from today's date. And then you have another, 3,500 years. And then you have another 3,500 years going back from the exodus of 1500 BC to the flood of Noah's day, which you had even told me that other cultures around the world have indicated that the flood of Noah's day was a worldwide flood and it occurred around 7000 BC.
Right.
So and that confirms what Harold Camping had
determined. 5000 BC would be 7000 years before now, right?
I'm sorry, right. I'm 7000 years ago meaning 5000 BC. So and Harold Camping had determined the same thing that you have stated. From an archaeological point of view, he determined that from a biblical study of the Bible only. So we have two different ways of testing and verifying that date of 5000 BC as the date of Noah's flood. Now, so we're seeing a 3,500, roughly 3,500 year period of this orbital period of this comet, this massive comet, intruding into our solar system every 3,500 years. So let's go back 3,500 years before the great flood of Noah's day. That's from 5,000 BC back to roughly 8,500 BC. And that's around the time 8,500 to 9,000 BC. It gets very difficult to determine when you get that far back.
Yeah, it gets a little shaky, doesn't it?
Yeah, they get a little bit more rough and approximate. But they say the Horizon Project, Brent Miller of the Horizon Project, and other scientists that he has studied say around 9,000 BC was the sinking of Atlantis. So here we have, we've pinned down these chronological index points in time, 8,500 BC roughly, 5,000 BC, the flood, of 8,500 BC, the sinking of Atlantis, 5,000 BC, the flood of Noah's day, 1,500 BC, the Israelites' exodus from Egypt. So where does that take you today? To another approach should be occurring right about now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The conclusion I've come to, John, is that about every three cycles, we really get smacked down in the mud as a culture, as a planet, as a people.
Well, that's interesting. Because, Harold Camping, the biblical scholar, had determined that the creation was around 11,000 B.C. So think about this. The sinking of Atlantis, suppose it was, say, 8,500 B.C. Then the previous incursion of Planet X would have been 12,000 B.C., right?
Right, right. That's
so
about right.
12,000 BC, you had a tremendous destruction of Earth. All life was totally wiped out.
Absolutely.
And it took another 1,000 years for Earth to recover and for God to create a new creation.
We take caller two here, John.
Sure.
Okay, we got Sheldon in Arizona. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Hey, John.
Yes, sir. Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. DiNardo. I have an important question. In the end, when all these Earth changes start happening, how will we be able to identify whether it's like the Black Ops military program creating all these Earth changes, or if it's really the Planet X causing it? How would we ever really know?
It'll get so severe that the whole world will basically be broken up, and you'll know that it's nothing is far beyond man's power to create such earthly devastation.
Okay, and the other question was, are your shows archived at all?
No, I'm sorry, they're not. But I do repeat them often. I have about 17 broadcasts, and I repeat them.
Okay, and one more thing, guys. There was this girl that was interviewed. It's a CNN video clip. She talks about these colors that were seen in the sky right before this quake down in Chile, and a similar thing was seen in the sky right before the quake in China in 2008, like rainbow colors in the sky. You think Planet X is causing this somehow?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've been wondering about that. There's some people say it's caused by HARP. But here's another theory, too, and I'm not sure which is correct. I think it's a natural phenomenon. You know, being in electronics for many years, we learned about the piezoelectric effect. It's called, spelled P-I-E-Z-O. And when there's a striking, a percussion of on a crystal or on rock, a high voltage is generated at the instant of the impact of this percussion. For example, your cigarette lighters, when you snap that cigarette lighter, there's a tiny little hammer in there that strikes a crystal, and several thousand volts of electricity, believe it or not a high current, but several thousand volts are generated, and that's enough that little spark that occurs from the high voltage jumps across a tiny little narrow air gap and ignites the butane in the lighter. Same thing happens with your gas stove. That's where you hear that clicking, that snapping. It's a piezoelectric impact or percussion effect. Well, just imagine when you have the tectonic plates of massive tectonic plates which are separated like cracked shells, like multitudinous cracked pieces of an egg shell. The egg is still intact, but it's cracked all over. Well, that's the way the Earth's tectonic plates are, too. Imagine when they impact one another. The impact would set off a tremendous high voltage. That high voltage generates an aurora in the sky, because now you have the voltage and the electrical current at the margin of impact below the ground. And when high current, whenever you have electrical current, especially intense, instantaneous electrical current, one phenomenon of electricity, of the field of electricity, of magnetism, is that it creates a magnetic field, instantaneous, very brief, abrupt magnetic field that would radiate upward through, you know, invisibly through the surface of the Earth and up into the sky. And that's my theory as to how you would get these lights occurring at the time of the earthquake. Now, one way we could check it out would be to find out, did the lights occur when the shaking occurred? Or did the lights occur before? Or did they occur after? That's an important clue.
Well, thank you for your very thorough explanation of that. You guys also mentioned that back in the 80s that Planet X was in the Orion constellation, correct?
You know, I've got a question about that. I've got to check the... go ahead. I'm sorry, John.
Well, it's coming from that direction. Yeah.
Well, guess what? I'm going through the listing of these classified military intelligence space shuttle missions. There were at least 10 to 14 of them back in the 80s. And on Discovery STS-33 flight, November 22nd, 1989, the payload was an Orion signal intelligence satellite.
Wow.
So maybe, you know, they put these code words out there to kind of give it
a clue. There wouldn't be much of a code, would it?
Right. Well, okay. That's really a telling piece of information.
It is.
Yeah, I've always wondered about these secret shuttle flights. They got to be doing more up there than what they're telling us.
Well, yeah, they can carry a payload equal to a city bus in that cargo bay. It's huge.
That's true.
And you know, here's another thing you just reminded me of, that I've been hearing reports that they're doing a lot of activity with the International Space Station right now. They're bringing up tons of equipment into the International Space Station, but I think that's a cover story. I mean, they're probably doing something with the space station, or maybe something else, but it's... I think it's related to observing Planet X, or maybe perhaps finding a way for the elite to somehow protect themselves. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. On this last flight that just ended, they put it up in an observatory deck that has a bunch of windows looking down on Earth, but I wonder if that's really what it's looking at.
You mean from the International Space Station?
Yeah, they put this little, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a little observatory deck that has a bunch of windows on it.
Mm.
Yeah, all kinds of neat things going on.
Well, you've brought us some good information.
Okay.
Yeah. Talk to you later, guys.
Thank you for your call, Sheldon. You wanted to get in a little bit into the Colburn here, John, also?
Yeah, there's a Bible scholar, Greg Jenner, has been studying Planet X ever since he was a 13-year-old boy. He's been studying astronomy and the Colburn Bible, and I'm just going to read a clip from his book. The name of his title, the author is Greg Jenner, J-E-N-N-E-R. The title of the book is Planet X and the Colburn Bible Connection. He says here, I'll just skip most of it, that the Colburn Bible was comprised of 11 books. The first six were written by Egyptian academics and scribes after the Exodus. So these were Egyptian historians who were very meticulous in students of history and recording history. And they witnessed this. They were survivors of this tremendous catastrophe that occurred at the time of the Israelites' exodus from Egypt. And briefly, I'm going to read from page 5 here. Briefly mentioned in the introduction, this ancient manuscript apparently was kept under lock and key within private Masonic libraries after several prophecies came to pass. It was then revealed to the world in 1992. Now he's given us some clips from the Colburn manuscript 3-7. Quote, "Men will fly in the air as birds and swim in the sea as fishes. Men will talk peace with one another. Hypocrisy and deceit shall have their day." All this is very reminiscent of today. Absolutely. "Women will be as men and men as women. Passion will be a plaything of man." All these conditions are rampant today. Manuscript 3-9. "Then men will be ill at ease in their hearts. They will seek they know not what, and uncertainty and doubt will trouble them. They will possess great riches, but be poor in spirit. Then will the heavens tremble and the earth move. Men will quake in fear, and while terror walks with them, the heralds of doom will appear. They will come softly as thieves to the tombs. Men will not know them for what they are. Men will be deceived. The hour of the destroyer is at hand."
Well, the destroyer is one of the many words used for the 10th planet in Wormwood, isn't it?
Yes. In fact, in the Bible, the book of Exodus chapter 12 mentions the destroyer passing over, and this is the origin of this ritual of the ceremony of the Passover, where God, the Savior, passes over those who are, all of us who are deserving of judgment. He passes over those who have the blood of the Lamb on their doorposts. It's symbolic of those today who have the blood of the Lamb in their hearts and trust in God, the Savior, in their minds and in their hearts day by day. They have the blood of the Lamb on their doorposts, and they will be protected when this destroyer passes over the skies once again, as it did 3,500 years ago.
Got another call here. Thomas in British Columbia. Go ahead, Thomas.
Oh, how you doing, John?
Real good, sir.
Is it possible that maybe there's something else happening and the effects that we see in our solar system could be from some other force that's not a planet or not a star?
There's so many.
I'll give you some evidence of that. You guys have internet service there, right?
Of course.
How about if I give you a link?
Please do.
It's HTTP tiny.pl / HX2WC. That's tinypl / HX2WC. That takes you to the Harvard University and an animation of our solar system produced by supercomputers.
Mm-hmm.
That animation is based on data gathered up to 2002 in July, and that's when this animation was created. The supercomputers, what it is all the known bodies in our solar system, and it tracks all the movements, and there's a daily plot that you can also get at the Harvard University Minor Planet Center, where this animation resides. If you pay attention to this animation, what you see is a bunch of blue little squares representing comets converging on the center of our solar system somewhere around the time of the creation of this animation. At the same time, if you look at the outer edges of our solar system, first of all, that in this animation, what you're looking at is the very center ring is actually just Jupiter. It doesn't show the inner planets, Mars, Earth, Mercury, and Venus. It only shows Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and then Pluto. It doesn't show a circle for Pluto, but Pluto is on there marked by a little circle with an X on it, which is right near the bottom of the animation.
Right.
Now, if you look at what's the Kepler belt, which is just outside of Pluto's orbit, you notice all the material there that's being tracked. At the point of conversion, you'll notice that there's a weird, strange effect happening to this all this material on the outside of our solar system. And you'll notice that there's some white objects on one side and some on the other, and there's kind of a balance between one side and the other. Even in all the other depicted objects, some are different objects that are colored differently for their nature of effect and how they behave in the solar system. At the beginning of this animation is an explanation of all of this. Now, at the point of conversion, when you watch this, you'll notice also out in this Kepler belt that there's a strange effect, that there's a whole alignment happening with all these particles. There's alignments that line up with the sun all the way around the outside of our solar system. This, what's happening here, is based on real data, and is in a real fact, and by my own data, that the point and peak of this cometary activity actually occurred in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And where I cataloged hundred comets going through our solar system, coming from all different directions, all converging around the same time, and that peak of convergence was at about 2003.
If they all coming from all different directions?
Sorry?
Do you say comets coming from all different directions?
Yes, they are.
Or they focus in one area.
You can get their individual paths from NASA, one of their websites, and I can actually put that information together and email that to you if you want.
Okay.
I have it archived here somewhere. Well, I don't have it right in front of me.
Thomas, can you summarize for us here? Because we need to move on, please.
Okay, what I'm saying is that this effect, real effect that we're seeing, is not caused by planet X, but explains all the anomalies of gravity variations in our solar system. And you can see that by the effect, real effect of what this computer animation is showing. And what I believe that to be is actually when we crossed through the galactic plane.
Okay, Thomas, thank you for your call. We got a break coming up, everybody. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Is as close as your telephone. Call him right now. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 28th of February. We've got a call on hold. We've covered a lot of territory here, John. I want you to get the location of your radio show out at least one more time here, if you would, please.
Okay, on shortwave, it's on Sunday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern on frequency 3185, shortwave, 3185, 10 p.m. Eastern on Sundays.
And
it's also simulcast on this particular website. It's not www, but it's WWRB, WWRB.org.
Whiskey, Romeo, Bravo.org.
Yes, two W's,
okay.
Not three.
We got a Roger in Indiana. Go ahead, Roger.
Yes, guys. I'm going to throw a slant at you. Maybe Planet X is actually under our nose this way. And if not, you tell me the effects of this. I've been hearing rumors for the last, around 10 years about our government sending a satellite down to Saturn and with 90 pounds of plutonium and plan on igniting that planet with the gases that they understand they probably can ignite. I mean, we're almost talking something like 2010, the movie, you know, the second sun. That's why I say maybe it's under our nose, in a sense. It's not something that's really coming, but something that's about to happen.
Okay.
If that does happen, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, we don't have much time to discuss this very much, but why don't you let John and I discuss that here real quick, Roger?
Okay, great. Thank you. Taking my call. Bye.
I think he might be pretty close there, because, as we said, it's coming. Dr. Harrington had determined that Planet X and its gang of thousands of gravitationally gripped comets is coming in from the south. That is below our revolving table, which we call the ecliptic plane, the plane about which all the planets revolve around the sun. So it's coming in below us, and we had a period in 2008 and 2009 when the sun suddenly went from a period of many years of hyperactivity to switching off like a light bulb. It was amazing how extraordinarily it switched from high activity to quiescence. And I speculated that it was because Planet X and its entourage were flying right below Jupiter at this particular time, and Jupiter in its orbit, 11-year orbit, happened to be just above Planet X, and the entourage was now electrically and electromagnetically interacting and discharging with Jupiter, the southern hemisphere of Jupiter, from below, and that was diverting all of its original fire from the sun. That's why the sun went quiet, because it was no longer being zapped by Planet X.
Any comment, John, on the thought about 90 pounds of plutonium being shipped off to Saturn there?
That was the Galileo mission, wasn't it? That's strange. Why they did that? It could have been, I've heard, someone said that it was a sort of a satanic ceremony, I don't know. I know NASA has satanic roots, and you can talk to James McCanney about that.
Right,
but Mars did something where there is sort of many ritualistic satanic activities going on with NASA. I wouldn't doubt that there was some kind of supernatural stuff going on, but this could be an experiment too. I other than that, I really don't know.
Okay. Well, I know the music's going to come here for the end of this hour pretty quick, John. I really appreciate your coming on board with us, and we need to do this about at least every 2 months at a minimum.
Well, the earthquakes keep on coming every month. Maybe we'll have to do it more frequently than that.
Yeah. The old planet's starting to rock and roll here, isn't it? Okay. Well, I don't want to be cut off in the middle of talking to you, John, so I'm just going to thank you for your time and wish you the best, and we will be talking soon.
Well, thank you for having me, John.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Okay, top of the hour break. You all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore coming with our second hour on Sunday, the 28th day of February, 2010. Welcome back to the John Moore Show. Well, we have a special guest here. We haven't had Professor McCanney on for way too long. I don't know how long it's been since we've had Jim on. Professor McCanney is a genuine, bona fide, credentialed scientist, as opposed to myself. I'm just a homicide detective. And Jim has authored several books focusing on the 10th planet, and weather, both of which, of course, are interconnected. And without further ado, Jim, are you there, sir?
John, can you hear me all well?
Okay, yes, sir. You're coming in loud and clear. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate you taking some time from your Sunday. We had an earthquake in the last couple of days here. Rather significant, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, yeah. I understand it's in the top five all-time earthquakes. So if that's a indication of fame, I guess Chile has, Santiago has gained some fame from that, but tremendous.
Well, but there's something skewed here. Now, on Drudge, I'm reading 8.8 Richter scale. Is that accurate, 8.8?
Well, it's what they're posting. I don't know myself, but typically those are measured but the thing is, it's kind of deceptive because it went on for 12 minutes.
Oh, it was 12 minutes. I thought it was 3 or 4 minutes. It was 12 minutes?
No, the report I heard was 12 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's in your middle of it, that's forever.
And then a few minutes later, they had a 6.6. And so, yeah, once when I was teaching down in the Latin America, I knew one of the professors in physics was from Argentina. And he said that I was asking him what it was like to be in a major earthquake. He said, first you try and run outside, get away from the building, and then you fall down and the street slaps you in the face until it's over.
Oh, my goodness. Jim, hold on. We got a break coming up here, our first break. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 28th of February, 2010. Jim, are you still there, sir?
Yes, John.
Okay, let's get your website out, and how do people listen to your radio show, please?
All the information, go to JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, 7 letters, JMCCSCI.com. And I believe you have a link from your page, John.
I do.
And so that's probably the best way for people to get there. But if you scroll down, all the information on the airing times, which there are quite a few of the radio show, are listed there. The first airing is Thursday evening, 6 p.m. Central Time on WWCR. And it re-airs three more times between Thursday and Friday night and Saturday morning. So. And then, of course, all the shows are archived. So
I was going to say, and ladies and gentlemen, Professor McCanny is a university-level instructor in science, and you can get the equivalent of at least a bachelor's degree by listening to all these lectures that are archived there at his website. So,
yeah, in fact, you probably learn a few things you won't learn at the university.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, before during the break off air, I wanted to make sure that everybody understood, and you and I are in agreement on this, that we've all heard at this point that Chile had a 9.2 earthquake a number of years ago, more than, was it in the early 70s, I think?
It may have been I'm trying to think. I've had so many dates in my mind with earthquakes. But anyway, yeah, it was
30-something years ago,
right.
9.2. We need to keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that the Richter scale was changed in about 1984, 1985, and reduced by one full number value. So the current 8.8 on the original Richter scale would have been a 9.8. Is that correct, Jim?
Right, and that's a full... it's a logarithmic scale, so it's a full factor of 10 different.
1,000%.
Right.
1,000%. Okay.
And so, it literally, and when you have amplitudes and it's 10 times larger, just imagine, a guitar string, and you pluck the guitar string and it goes back and forth, say, an eighth of an inch. Now, 10 times more than that would be more than an inch going back and forth, the vibration, so... It's truly a huge difference.
Well, our to use a phenomenal football player, it's the difference between getting hit by one 200-pound player or 10 200-pound players all at the same time.
Right, right. And that's exactly, yeah.
I hurt just thinking types. About that, because I've been there and done that.
Yeah, it is not fun. But also the duration, this one lasted a total of 12 minutes. So the shaking for that length of time is just, you know, you can't even fathom what those people must go through. And it shatters your world. Because a few minutes later, there's going to be another one following. And, of course, there was. It was about a 6.6, which would have been a major earthquake any place. That was the aftershock.
Absolutely. And damaging buildings that are already damaged, and structures and bridges and roads and dams, it doesn't take as much to damage something more severely that's already been damaged, does it?
Oh, no. And if you see the pictures, I saw aerial views today. I was watching the flyovers, and just extensive damage. It looked like literally nothing was left standing.
Well, the majority of these early photographs came from Santiago, 200 miles away from where the earthquake actually happened.
Right. Yeah, there were some more minor cities and along the coast. The coast was severely damaged, and then the waves that came back in did a lot of extensive flooding.
You're right, Jim. I was telling my wife, I saw pictures of boats as big as my house on dry land.
Right. Yeah, and so that's what happens. You get the tsunami that leaves, but when it leaves, it vacates the water, and then that comes rushing back onto shore. So the people right next to the shore, they say an estimate of 807 people dead. And it just, how do they get these numbers? You know,
I don't know. They're probably, if they got communications, they're probably talking to chiefs of police and mayors to get early reports and probably doing flyovers. But we've seen this time and time again where the reports of the first day or two are a tiny percentage of the number of people actually dead.
Right, yeah. How could they possibly say that? And apparently there's a small island, and I've forgotten the name of it, maybe a few hundred miles offshore. They said a 200-foot wave rolled over the island, and there's really nothing left there. There were some small government installations there. And one of those low-lying islands, you know, and they said that just there's nothing there anymore.
Right. So those people are just wiped out and gone.
Just gone,
What a tragedy. Well, tell us, Jim, everybody's speculating about the cause of the earthquake, and at this point, would it be any more than speculation?
These are, of course, places that sit on fault lines, just like Haiti. There was a close to 7 point off of southeastern Japan out in the ocean. There was an earthquake in Oklahoma, I believe, yesterday or the day before.
Another one.
And I don't know how big it was, but you wonder, and of course the speculation is that somebody is doing this. And if there's a perfect crime, creating an earthquake is a perfect crime, because how do you prove it? It's a very difficult animal to prove, because these places simply sit on fault lines, and these earthquakes are expected.
Right.
So it's very difficult to see a smoking gun, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And there are people who try and associate it with, say, solar activity. And there again, that's a very, that can happen. There are reasons, but the sun has not been active lately enough to cause these kind of things, but there are so many factors locked into the earth that we don't know about, that we can't see. It's very difficult with earthquakes and earth activity to understand really what all is going on there.
Right. I believe I read so much, I know you do too. Were you the one making the comment about the tiny percentage of archaeological discoveries that have actually been found compared to what's out there?
Yeah, I did a radio show recently. One of my shows was on the fact that about 95% of archaeological finds simply they're still unearthed. They don't even know where they are. So what we're looking at is a small, maybe 5% of known archaeological sites that
actually being worked or dug up. So it's trying to, the example I used is you have a bunch of people in a room with an elephant, and in fact they're all blindfolded, and they each get to touch the elephant once. And then they're going to tell you what the elephant is like from their one point of view. And that's what archaeology is like, trying to view the past. But as with any of the sciences or any of the fields of study today, they all deny the biggest man and earth-shaping event in recent history, and that is that we had a major cataclysm on this planet within recent history, and a major celestial object came through the solar system. It didn't hit Earth. It came near Earth and devastated Earth, and we pretty much know what it was. It eventually became the planet Venus.
Right.
But modern science, modern archaeology, just look at Mayan archaeology. It talks about Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god that ruled the skies, and they are completely immune to the fact that this was a giant comet. And the mythology of the Mayans is related to Venus, not the sun, not the moon, not 2012, not anything else. You know, it's related to the cycles of Venus.
Right.
And so how can we possibly have knowledge or correct information when every major branch of study denies that this event happened? It's amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you 100% there, Jim. You wanted to come on for 20 minutes. We're coming up on 20 minutes here pretty quick. Final comments you wanted to get out here?
Well, if you look at the past and you understand those events happened, and you look at the earth-shaping events and the events that shaped man as we see him today, and then understand that most people are oblivious to the fact that it could happen again.
Absolutely.
And that science denies it. It's just incredible. The amount of, just look at what we're doing and what politicians are doing, and it has nothing to do with what we really should be doing on this planet and where we should be putting our resources.
Well, we should be preparing for the next smack in the face here, shouldn't we?
Right, absolutely, and trying to get some semblance of our population spaceborne so we can live out there. And
well,
instead of trying to think about sending one guy to the moon 20 years from now is absolutely absurd. The level of absurdity going on today is it's mind-boggling.
We have time for one quick call here, Jim?
Sure.
Okay, Sheldon from Tucson. Go ahead, Sheldon.
Hey, John. Hey, Professor McCanny. Hey, I'm on a website right now called newsblogged.com. There's been 15 quakes in Chile within the last 9 hours, and most of them are around a 5.
Well,
well, the aftershocks, yeah, that's typical, and that's a very active region. Chile has two of the top 5 earthquakes in history, in recorded history. So,
really?
Yeah, they're in a bad spot, and if you look at the top 20, they are well populated in the top 20.
Okay. Jim, we're at our 20 minutes, and we're at the break. Thank you for your time, sir. I'll be in touch.
Okay, thanks, John.
Thank you, sir. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
John Moore is taking your telephone calls right now on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Pick up the phone and join in the conversation. Call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And thanks for listening to RBN.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 28th of February, 2010. Well, I am a working homicide detective, private investigator. My website is thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com. You can see all the products that I've gone out and found for you folks. Some I've generated myself, like my latest DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, The Truth Behind the Deception of Global Warming. And, of course, it has to do with Planet X. In case you didn't know, that is what's causing these problems. I have a toll-free auto line 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's 800-592-9494. 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Freeze-dried guy continues to do innovative things and cutting-edge things with long-term storage food. His buyer's club, for $5 a month, you get a very nice discount across the board for everything he has to sell. Very innovative. His pay-as-you-go clubs, which entitles you to anywhere from one case to several cases of food a month, depending on what buyer's club you get involved with. Delivered to your door once a month, shipping included. Anywhere from entry level, around $100 a month, to several hundred dollars a month, depending on how much food you get. You can get all the details at his website, freezedryguy.com. There's a link from my website, thelibertyman.com. And his toll-free number is 866-404-3663. I say again, 866-404-3663. He's on the left coast out there. So give him a call tomorrow about 9 o'clock Pacific time, and you should be able to talk to one of his people. The missing link for home-generated electricity has always been the batteries. Lead-acid batteries do not last more than 12 years. 8 to 12 years is the average life for heavy-duty, industrial-grade lead-acid batteries. 8 years is average, 10 is pretty good, 12 years is kind of pushing the limits. The Edison batteries, which are nickel iron alkaline, we don't know how long they last because the original Edison batteries are still in service at the Edison Museum, being charged and discharged every day for more than a century. Rick Salata up there at KT Ordnance has set up a special website. It's called ZapWorks, Z-A-P-P, ZapWorks.com. And there's a link to my website, of course, to KT Ordnance, and Rick's phone number is there at KT Ordnance. You can give him a call tomorrow morning. He's been putting in a lot of late hours. He's on Central Time. Give him, you know, mid-morning would be a good time to call, if you would, please. And we've got a caller on hold here, John from Wisconsin. Go ahead, John. How are you today?
Usual. And I'd like to recommend to a lot of people to go to survivalblog.com. Yesterday's posting, a guy named Blake in Arkansas has The Art of Humping a Pack. I highly recommend people should read it.
I did read that posting, and it was well done, obviously written by somebody who's been there and done that, right?
Right. Somebody like me being in the Marine Corps. I do recommend, don't ever put canned foods in your backpack. I've done that once when on a hiking trip. Believe me, it was torture, but you want to freeze.
Well, you don't want the canned food against your back, no.
No, we don't.
You put your socks and underwear between the cans in your back.
Right. And you can't, you know, if you want tuna, you can get the tuna in the packages that they have, the non-canned packages. You want to travel light, so if you want to carry freeze-dried food or dehydrated food, you know.
Yeah, well, so it depends on the mission. If you're on the run, on a some kind of tactical mission, you may not have time to eat freeze-dried food. So that's another consideration.
And I did send you an email. I don't know if you got it on the Pegasus Project.
I got that, John. I appreciate that, and I'll take a look at that as soon as I get the time.
Yeah, very interesting. He said that how true it was. He said they went back to 2013 and went in the future and saw the U.S. Supreme Court building underneath the water.
Yeah, that was a show on George Norrie, Coast to Coast.
Yeah, George Norrie was on the November 11th, 2009. If somebody can check, listen to the archives, very interesting show. And he said they went back to 2013 and he saw the U.S. Supreme Court building underwater.
Well, Washington D.C. is 85 feet above sea level.
Correct.
So, you don't need to do a time travel thing to understand this. The U.S. Navy, in classified briefings, has been telling these men since 1979 that Washington, D.C. is going to be underwater. So,
right. And that's common sense. I mean, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure that out, you know. I just thought I'd post that, maybe get a hold of that guy. It'd be real, real interesting to have him on.
I'll check that out, John. I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Okay, John, we'll talk to you again.
Okay, and we got Jim from Texas. Go ahead, Jim.
John?
Yes, sir.
I got two things of information that I heard Friday night on Lee Rogers' show on the internet. A man named Lucas came to Austin on January 27th of this year and gave a lecture about Planet X.
Right.
And you know the Norway thing that happened back in December of
2009? Can you hold on, Jim? We got a break coming up.
Sure.
Jim, hold on. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be back after the break. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 28th of February, 2010. You still there, Jim?
Yes, I am.
Okay, where were we?
Okay, Lee Rogers on his site. My wife looks this stuff up, but we were listening Friday night. And right. He had a man named Lucas on there who had given a lecture at Brave New Books here in Austin in January. Right. And the anomaly that happened in Norway back in December, 3 months ago,
right,
with the spiral in the sky.
Right.
Well, that's a precursor for Planet X. He put the dots together, and he has a huge lecture that you can go to. It's called D-Rabbits, as in plural, dash rabbit, D-Rabbits-Hole.
Okay.
.com. Anyway, he has several pictographs on there that show the same thing, that same kind of spiral with a stick man with his hand pointing up, and goats running to the mountains, and waves lashing at the shoreline.
I've seen the presentation you're referring to, Jim. In fact, I know Lucas. It's L-U-C-U-S, by the way.
Right.
That entire preparation and presentation is on YouTube in, I think, 13 10-minute segments.
Right. And here's something else. You may know about this, too, but there's a slab of metal that's 55 miles long and 12 miles wide that hit Greenland, and it's melting a hole through the ice up there.
I looked on Google, and I looked at that thing, and I haven't really done much more checking on it myself, but there is, when you go to Google Earth, you can find something about that size right there in Greenland, just about a quarter of the way up from the middle, at the bottom.
Right, and I think that's pretty strange.
Well, nobody could disagree with that. And I know, Jim, I know. Is that it for right now?
I think we're here. I think Earth's fixing to get a good shaking.
Well, it's... At this point, there's no more speculating after what's happened in the past month with these two massive earthquakes. My home here is way too close to the New Madrid seismic zone, and we fully expect to have one or more really big shakes here on the New Madrid seismic zone.
And another thing that ties us all together is heads of corporations, our politicians, police chiefs, and other people of importance in the higher echelons of our society here, they're all retiring or they're having fake mysterious deaths or disappearances right now.
Right. Well, I've been reading the same things, and I'm not sure what to make of that yet.
Well, they're all running.
I know many.
We all know where they're going.
Well,
have a good day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great. Thank you for your call, Jim. And we got a regular caller here, John from Florida. Go ahead, John.
Hello, John. Good show. I'm glad you had Professor McKinney on again. And the first guest you had on was a good show. And I've got his website pulled up. This is a recommendation. I think people should buy some freeze dry. Talk to the freeze dry guy. Get his escape and evasion water filter. And I'm not going to put a plug in for Walmart, but you can buy down here in Florida. You can buy freeze dried little packets. And people should buy that and get used to eating that. And buy the number 10 cans from the freeze-dry guy, but get familiar with eating them out of the packets and have a 72-hour bug-out bag.
Right, right. I agree. Yep.
You know, people should do that. And Walmart down here in Florida, not all of them, but they do sell that, the packets of freeze-dry, and get used to eating it and get, you know, so you can do that in the field. People need to practice doing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can't learn how to do this stuff out of a book, can you, John?
No. And you know, and maybe have a dozen of them after you get familiar how to cook them. you know, and just add water.
Well, you can heat it cold. You can put water in it and heat it cold, but it's a lot tastier if you heat it up.
Oh, yeah. Actually, the lasagna is excellent. But anyway, and people need to get like a 72-hour bug-out bag, get that prepared.
And have a place to go to.
Have a place to go to, have extra fuel, gas cans, you know, for your vehicle.
You did, get a big old RV and fix it up and get it ready to go, right?
Well, I got a 20-footer, and I got to do some work on it, but I'm preparing slowly.
Well, be sure and get Michelin tires on that, baby.
Brand new ones. They're on already.
Way to go, John.
Thank you.
Okay, is that it for today?
Yeah, I wanted to put a plug in for people for the 72-hour and the freeze-dry guy. What used to give out that when you bought products from him, like cases of freeze dry, he was including the escape and evasion water filter.
Yeah, he was. He has different premiums at different points in time, and you never know what you're going to get as a premium from freeze dry guy.
But that's a really compact unit, like the size of a cigar, and it fits in the backpack real good.
Yep, they're handy. Okay, well, thank you for your call, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, we're at a point in time here, and I've been publicly talking about the 10th planet for about 6 years now. The Prophecy Club sent me on a nationwide speaking tour in January 05 about all this. I wrote my paper, No Need for Panic, later that same year, which that paper became the basis for my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. We're into it pretty deep here, ladies and gentlemen. These, as my 2005 paper says, No Need for Panic, we will have increased number and severity of earthquakes, increased number and severity of volcanism, increased number and severity of violent weather-related events, all of which we're seeing on the increase, both number and severity, right now. A call from Idaho. Mark from Idaho, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening to the man talking about that spiral from up in Norway.
Yes, sir.
And the other day I did a search on the Internet for the Las Lunas Decalogue stone that's down there, the Ten Commandments that were written in old damn script on the rock down there.
Okay.
And while I was searching for that, I came across some other rock paintings, you know, petroglyphs.
Petroglyphs, yes.
Yeah, and some of those were actually spirals.
You're right, Mark. And in fact, if you see Lucas's presentation, these petroglyph spirals on petroglyphs are ubiquitous. They are all over the planet. There's something very, very important. You know, carving a picture in a rock is a time-consuming labor of love, I guess you could say. And they didn't put things on there for decoration. You know, they were trying to send us a message and send us a warning through time when they made these petroglyphs, in my opinion. They wanted to warn future generations of something really, really important and really, really dangerous. And that's what these spirals are on there for.
Yeah, and I went down, and I went on the Internet, and I also found directions to the Head of Sinbad rock painting that Professor McCanny has on his book cover, Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes.
Right.
And I was standing right in front of that thing, and you wonder what they used to do those with, if it was blood or what they used. But anyway, I just thought I'd mention about that spiral to you. And,
okay, well, I appreciate that, Mark.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for your call. We appreciate it. Earth changes are upon us. The U.S. Navy, not John Moore. This is important. People say, oh, John Moore is information. I had a discussion, a very interesting dinner conversation with some neighbors a couple of nights ago. Most educated men and women who want to keep up on what's going on, they have access to books, magazines, radio and television reports, movies. All that's what we call open source material. Unclassified open source material. Like the one gentleman talking about the Harvard website and relating to astronomy. Open source material. I've been uniquely positioned because of what I do and who I am, and with my career and my background, to know how to locate and debrief witnesses. That's what I do for a living as a homicide detective. I found the witnesses, the veterans of the U.S. Navy Submarine Corps, and I've debriefed them. What I have and what I give you access to through my information, my global warming, what the government isn't telling you, DVD, what I'm giving you is access to the classified information, the secrets, if you will. What you can't get by reading weekly magazines, by watching the History Channel, by reading books, and so forth. The classified material as known by the United States government. That's what I bring to the table. The U.S. government, not John Moore, gave themselves until December 31st, 2009, 2 months ago, to get ready for the 10th planet and rising ocean levels. Originally, it was December 31st, 2010, this year, 8 months in the future. But they redid their calculations, and they said, oh my goodness, we don't have until December 2010. We've got to get this done now. We got to get it done by December 31st, 2009. I think we may be at the edge of starting to learn and understand why. These two earthquakes in the past 4 weeks are absolutely breathtaking. The hundreds, and there are literally hundreds of volcanoes under the ocean, under the oceans of the world, heating up these oceans, changing climate. You want to change climate, you heat up the oceans. You're going to get some climate change. The volcanoes are happening under the ocean and on dry ground also, because our planet is going through some changes brought on by interacting with the 10th planet with electrical energy and gravity. That's what's happening. That's real. You can take that to the bank. The federal government has spent literally hundreds of billions, with a B, of your tax dollars the past 30 years, since 1979, getting ready for this. They have built extensive underground shelters for people chosen to survive these matters. I had an exchange earlier today with one of my correspondents, Sheldon in Tucson there, about Colonel Jim Ammerman, the retired U.S. Army chaplain who retired as a full bird colonel. And the revelation he made in 1998 that dozens of men and women and their families stationed at Cheyenne Mountain had just disappeared, just gone. And I know for a fact, from my personal private contacts, that it wasn't just men and women from Cheyenne Mountain, it was men and women with the lettered agencies also. At the time, we didn't know about anything except maybe Y2K. We thought, well, maybe this is Y2K related, but that didn't make any sense. But it was all we were aware of at the time. When you put those disappearances in the same thinking as what we're looking at now with the 10th planet, the same matter, it starts to make a lot more sense. What we're looking at here is of a cyclical nature. Every 3,600 years, our planet gets knocked to its knees. It's a cyclical event. And we are the generation that will be living, hopefully living, through this thing. This cyclical event that our planet goes through every 3,600 years. As John DiNardo said in the first hour, the most recent one to us was at the time of Moses' exodus out of Egypt. The one before that was the worldwide flood that Noah survived with his family. By the way, that 500 cultures left written records and oral traditions of the Great Flood. 500 different cultures on this planet left oral traditions and written records of that flood about 7,000 years ago. It was a worldwide flood. And the cycle before that, we as a people, we as a human race, really got smacked down really got smacked down in the mud. That's what happened, ladies and gentlemen. And we're at the edge of going through it again. My mantra, my passion is preparedness. I want to see people get prepared so they can survive this with the people they care about the most. That's why we talk so much about water filters and freeze-dried food and all the matters related to preparedness. Some people are doing more than others. Obviously, that's the way I expect it to be. Some people are just now waking up. I got a note this morning from a gentleman up in Illinois, just about 80 miles north of St. Louis. He just found out about this in the last few weeks. And this will continue. This will continue right up to the very end. We'll have people waking up and getting exposed to this for the first time and figuring out they got to do something. That's the nature of radio. That's the nature of this issue, is there will be new people every week exposed for the first time to this information as a brand new matter for them to take into their consideration and to incorporate in everything that they're doing and everything they know. That's just the nature of radio. It's like a classroom with a revolving door at the back. There's always people coming in, always people going out. As we go through this year, I want to encourage you to get your spiritual preparations squared away. It's not my job as a radio talk show host to tell you what it should be. It is my responsibility to let you know it's very important that you take care of it. Get your skills, the skills of a emergency medical technician, your emergency medical treatment skills, EMT, paramedic type skills, your ham radio skills so you can intercept the emergency frequencies. You watch what's going on in these emergencies, you'll see that communications is one of the key things that helps keep people alive, and one of the reasons people die as well when communications don't work. Other than that, you're looking at the skills that are commonly found on farms and ranches all over the United States. How to plant, grow, harvest, store food of all kinds. Animal husbandry. Equipment maintenance and repair. Operating equipment. It's a very, very long list of skills that men and women need to survive hard times. The hard times that we are fast approaching us. That's where we are. These skills, of course, will be valuable no matter who you are or where you live. With these hard economic times that we're facing, which probably is a depression, to put it quite bluntly, the more skills you have, the better off you'll be. Break coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's time for us to face the truth with John Moore. Now, if you want to talk to John live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Sunday, the 28th of February, 2010. Well, it's been a really fast 2 hours for me. I know it probably was for you. My special guest the first hour, John DiNardo. My special guest the second hour, Professor McKinney. All these great calls that we had. It was just a very fast and great 2 hours. We got a fresh week coming up, a time to be productive, have a great time. I encourage people to continue all their normal social and business activities. Of course you should. At the same time, while you prepare for what we know is coming at us, 2010 will be breathtaking in many ways, between the economy, possibly World War III clicking off here, the earth changes. It will be a breathtaking, fast-moving year. We're already finished with 2 months as of today. Start the third month tomorrow. A time to be prepared. It's always a time to be prepared. These earthquakes are going to become more frequent and more severe. You can count on it. And there's no place in this country, as we're learning, no place in this country that is completely safe from being in an earthquake. We're having earthquakes in places they've never had earthquakes before, along with the usual threats of tornadoes and hurricanes and floods and fires and all the things that are normally put us at risk. Being prepared is the smart thing to do. We have what appears to be a luxury of time right now to make these final preparations. Get your water filter, get your food, get your radios, get your medical equipment. Have a way to defend your life and the lives of your loved ones. I've worked for my entire adult life with people charged with crimes, very vile and violent crimes. And frequently, they look at any kind of crisis as economic opportunity. That's what they've told me face-to-face over the interview table in these prisons and jails. We look at it, John, as economic opportunity. That's reality. That's my reality. A couple I had dinner with Friday night, the young lady was a former pistol student of mine. Her husband is going to be signing up for a class soon. Neither one of them grew up in the gun culture. They both see the need at this point in their lives to be armed to defend themselves and their property. That's become their reality. I hope it's in the process of becoming yours if it hasn't already. That's something that needs to happen. You need to be able to defend your life and defend the people that you care about the most. So the hour is just about up here. Be sure and listen to the next host. I'm sure you'll be entertained and informed and educated, as always. I'm on the Micro Effect Monday through Friday, 7 to 8 a.m. Central Time. There's a link to my website, thelibertyman.com. That's it for today. You all be safe out there. Buy lots of ammunition. And God bless America.
Introducing the new Go Berkey Kit, the first of its kind portable water purification system for those on the go. The new Go Berkey system has an amazing output of about a gallon an hour. Each Go Berkey Kit includes a 1-quart high-quality stainless steel system, complete with a black Berkey purification element, a generic sports bottle, and a nylon carrying case. The whole kit weighs a mere 2.25 pounds. With an expected element life of around 3,000 gallons, you can refill the Go Berkey system up to an incredible 12,000 times before needing to replace the element. The new Go Berkey kit is perfect for backpacking, hiking, emergency packs, bug out bags, international travel, car emergency kits, or for your desk at home or at work. Get your Go Berkey kit today for only $139 by calling 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. The online store, it's a featured product. Not available in Iowa.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.